It's interesting that in Hebrew thinking, and indeed in the teaching of Jesus, there's never any effort to elevate poverty. It's always seen as a bad thing. It's seen as a curse. It's seen as things going wrong. God's plan was never for the people to be poor. The promise of the land, which was so central to the Old Testament and indeed still so central to the Jewish identity, is about a place where you can be nourished, a place where you can thrive and prosper, a place where there is enough to care for you and your neighbour, where your family can be nourished and brought up in security. So the idea that there is something noble about being poor is not certainly found in the Hebrew scriptures. Equally, wealth is not elevated either. Just this sense of God's, part of God's blessing is that there will be provision. Now, some of the early Christian thinkers, what they're called, often referred to as the desert hermits, they elevated poverty, and some of the religious orders took vows of poverty. Now, I'm not saying that they weren't prompted and led by the Holy Spirit, but that doesn't find its root, certainly not in the Hebrew scriptures and not in the ministry of Jesus. But I struggle in my reading of the Bible to see anywhere that advocates those kinds of choices. Maybe if we look at the prophets like John the Baptist, who lived in the wilderness. So the idea that poverty is a thing of any value isn't biblical. So when we come to think about poverty as people of the Word made flesh, I think it's quite an easy position for us to take in standing against poverty. One trend, however, that I find worrying our culture is this shift towards seeing the poor as being a threat. Some of the political language we hear, we'll talk about the poor and, they're a threat to hard-working people. Have you heard that line? And all this worry about unemployed scroungers, they're often called now. They're not people out of work, they're scroungers. How did that happen? And this fuss over the European neighbours coming to the UK to work. Well, I lived out in Cambridge Way, East Anglia, and were it not for the Polish workers, the farms just wouldn't have happened. Our shops would be empty of food. These people come and work long, hard days for money you and I probably wouldn't get out of bed for. And yet we're demonising these who might be economically poor and yes, coming looking for low-paid work here. But it's work that not many English people choose to do. I just don't understand why we make out these threats. It's fear. And friends, we need to be guided by the Holy Spirit. Not to be people who fear the poor, but people who care for the poor. Jesus' words in the Beatitudes are very challenging. They're quite controversial. I've heard a number of talks on these and read things about the Beatitudes, and a lot of scholars are asking, was he being figurative? Was he being literal? Have they a kind of a cultural setting in a modern world? Do these Beatitudes still apply? Well, my view is I do think the words are difficult, but not because they're confusing, but because they're hard. I think Jesus knew exactly what he was saying and meant what he was saying. There's a film, I've not been able to see it yet, but I've seen clips for it. A Martin Scorsese film, The Wolf of Wall Street, which is about an American stock market buyer, seller, whatever they call them, trader, that's the word, isn't it, who in the 80s made just millions and millions, and the excesses that followed on from that. what happens when we begin to worship the god of mammon, when wealth becomes our god, how dangerous that can be. And Jesus advocates us that we have a hunger and a thirst for doing what's right. Happy, we said, my text says, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. And it got me thinking about being hungry for what's right. Being thirsty for that what's right. Having that within me that aches for right things, think godly things. Of course, God's desire is that the poor be fed, that the homeless find shelter, that prisoners are released, that those in dark places are brought light. That's the gospel, good news for the poor. And I found this challenging. And I kind of asked the question, what does it look like? How do we earth this? How do we translate this hunger for righteousness, this thirst for righteousness, into our lives? And I just got thinking, and one or two things occurred to me, both collectively and personally. You see, I do think a hunger and a thirst for righteousness will look like 3 hours sat as a volunteer in Open Church. It will look like that. It will look like getting engaged with local charities that help to provide for poor people, be it shelter, clothing, things for their homes. It will look like us actually making ourselves a little bit poor because we give our money to help those who have less than us. That's what it will look like. It will look like us perhaps taking time to notice and maybe even buy the big issue. Small things. Maybe it will look like us getting more active politically. And whatever shade of politics might be our thing, I don't think that's the big deal. I think the big deal is that we express our voice as a follower of Jesus. See, I don't think having a hunger and a thirst for righteousness ever looks passive. It never looks disinterested. A hunger and a thirst for righteousness never thinks it's somebody else's problem. And that for me is a challenge, friends, because that's, if I think about my own life, I kind of blow a bit hot and cold at times and I will boil with rage over some of these issues. And then there'll be times when I'm quite happy just for quiet carry on. I quite like my comfortable home. And the fact that I can, if I choose to have a couple of holidays a year, I quite like that I can sit, if I want, sit and have a skinny latte in Costa without it breaking the bank. But I can't allow myself to do that and ignore. I mean, if, particularly sitting Nero, I'm one of the guys that I've seen in our Open Church, often sits right opposite in a doorway there. And I often feel it's a strange juxtaposition. That here he wants all this wealth and comfort, and yet this guy who's regularly there, having a hard time. Now, I don't know the backstory, I don't know all that's going on. But I do know that if I am to hunger and thirst for righteousness as Jesus said I should, then being passive, being inactive, being disengaged is not an option. And I hope that will be the challenge and thrust of today, that we will hear the Holy Spirit saying, what does it look like in your life? To kind of hear God say to us personally, what are you doing? What are you going to do? That's for you to discern, friends. That's for me to discern. I don't think it's my place to tell you what you should do. However, I think it would be remiss of me as a preacher to say we can't read this passage without us doing something. The poor are our responsibility, as are the rich. As part of God's created order, we are called to love our neighbour as ourselves, whatever their status may be. Now, I understand that the reasons for poverty are many and complex. I understand that this is a very, very difficult issue, and one that in all likelihood will not be solved in our lifetime. However, that does not excuse us from doing our best. And I think Jesus' words in the Beatitudes is a very good place to start. The gospel challenges us. And it should be from an inside out. It should be the Holy Spirit moving us here that then prompts us to act and to speak and to think and to do, to live in such a way that we reflect in God's love for all people. As we look to God, His Spirit will be our helper and our guide.